Welcome to the deep dive. You've probably heard about tax loss harvesting if you're engaged in investing at all. It's often presented as this really savvy move to increase your returns. And well, you might be curious if it actually delivers on that promise.
That's right. It gets a lot of airtime, and you can see why. I mean, the idea of lowering your tax bill, it's pretty appealing. But like a lot of financial tactics, the reality can be a bit more complex than the headline.
Exactly. So our goal today is really to try and simplify that complexity for you. We've been looking closely at a really informative report from Greenline Partners. This one's from back in November 2018.
Yeah, the author's Manesh Schonberg. It takes a really detailed look at tax loss harvesting.
Right. And the key question we want to tackle for you is, are those benefits everyone talks about, you know, the ones that get touted so much, are they actually realistic?
And yeah, that Greenline report is our main source here. It gives, I think, a really clear and well-supported analysis. So hopefully, by the end of this deep dive, you'll have a much clearer picture of the real value and, importantly, the potential downsides of tax loss harvesting.
Okay, let's dig right in then. What exactly is tax loss harvesting? Like the nuts and bolts.
Okay, so in essence, it involves selling investments that have, well, gone down in value. You take those
The
losses.
ones you've realized by selling.
Exactly, realized losses, and you use them to offset capital gains you've realized somewhere else in your portfolio. That reduces your current tax liability. But, and this is crucial, you got to be aware of the wash sale rules.
Ah, yes, the wash sale rule.
Yeah, it means you have to wait at least 30 days before you buy back the same thing or something substantially identical.
Right, that 30-day rule. Super important. And I think a common misunderstanding maybe is that this is a way to permanently just avoid paying taxes. But that's not quite right, is it?
No, not at all. And the Greenline report really hammers this point home. It's not about eliminating taxes forever. The tax you save today by using those losses, you're probably going to pay it later down the line when you eventually sell the replacement asset, assuming it's gone up.
Okay, so if it's not permanent tax savings, what's the actual advantage? What are we really talking about here?
The main benefit, the real core of it, is tax deferral. You're pushing the tax payment off into the future.
Okay, deferral.
Yeah, and by postponing that tax payment, you let the entire pre-tax amount keep working for you, keep growing, hopefully, for longer. Think about it. If you pay, say, $20 in taxes on a $100 gain today, you only have $80 left to invest.
Right.
But if you defer that $20 tax using a loss, the full $100 stays invested, more capital working for you. That's the idea.
That makes sense. It's about letting the whole amount compound before the tax man gets his share. Can you maybe walk through a quick example just to nail down how that deferral helps?
Sure. Let's use that $100 investment idea. Imagine you owe $20 in taxes on some gain. If you pay it, you're down to $80 reinvested. But let's say you have another investment that's down, and you sell it to realize a loss that cancels out that $20 gain on paper.
Okay.
Now, you don't owe the $20 tax today. You can keep the full $100 invested. You haven't avoided the tax, remember, but you've deferred it. That $100 continues to potentially grow, and you'll deal with the tax implications later when you sell the replacement. The Greenline report really stresses that this deferral is where the value supposedly comes from.
Okay, I get the deferral concept. Push the tax bill down the road. But
Understand.
reading the Greenline report, it feels like they're suggesting the actual value of this deferral might not be as, well, massive as some people make it out to be.
That's definitely a central point of their analysis. Yeah. They use an analogy comparing to retirement accounts like 401ks or IRAs. Those also offer tax deferral.
Right, we're familiar with that.
And the ultimate benefit you get from that kind of deferral really depends on two big things: how much your investments actually grow, and what tax rates look like when you finally take the money out.
Okay, that makes sense. If returns are low or if taxes go way up in the future, the deferral isn't worth as much. So let's tackle returns first. What did Greenline find there?
They looked at a few scenarios, like a low-growth world with 4% annual returns, sort of base case at 7%, and a high-growth one at 10%. Then they compare the after-tax returns you'd get if you pay taxes every year versus deferring those taxes for 10 years using harvesting.
And the result.
What's really striking is that in all those scenarios, low, medium, high returns, the benefit from just deferring was pretty modest, like really modest, nowhere near the 1% or even 2% extra annualized return that sometimes gets thrown around for tax loss harvesting.
Wow, so even in a high return environment, the pure deferral benefit wasn't huge.
Exactly. The report even points to an older study. from the Financial Analyst Journal back in 2003 that basically found similar results.
Mm-hmm.
So even before we start talking about the costs of doing this, the theoretical upside from deferral alone seems smaller than the hype suggests.
Okay, so potential return boost is maybe less exciting. What about the other piece, future tax rates?
Right. Greenline looked at that too. They modeled what happens if future capital gains rates are different from today's. They used a 10-year deferral, assumed a 7% return, and then varied the future tax rate, like maybe it drops to 15%, stays at the current 20% at the time of the report, or jumps up to 40%.
And what difference did that make?
Well, if future tax rates are lower than today, then yes, deferring taxes is definitely a win. You save tax now at a higher rate and pay later at a lower rate.
Makes sense.
But, and this is a big but, if future tax rates end up being higher, then deferral can actually backfire. You save tax at today's rate, only to pay more tax later. It's the same risk you have with traditional 401ks versus Roths, right?
Mm.
If you expect higher taxes later, paying tax now might be better.
That's kind of counterintuitive, isn't it? Thinking deferral could hurt. And the report mentioned the possibility of higher future rates.
Yeah, they float the idea, mentioning things like ongoing federal budget deficits as a potential driver for future tax increases. It's speculative, of course, but it's a risk factor to consider.
Okay. And the report also seems to say that comparing loss harvesting directly to retirement account deferral isn't quite apples to apples.
Exactly. The retirement account analogy is useful conceptually, but it actually overstates the benefit of loss harvesting. Why? Because with a 401k, you're deferring taxes on the entire account value's growth.
Okay.
With loss harvesting, you're only deferring tax on the value of the loss you harvested. It's a much smaller amount that you're shielding temporarily.
Ah, I see. So the base amount being deferred is way smaller. That's a really important difference. Why do you think people use that retirement comparison so much then?
That's a good point. Maybe just because, like you said earlier, tax deferral is familiar from retirement planning. It's an easy shorthand, even if it's not perfectly accurate here.
Right. So smaller deferral base. What else?
Plus, loss harvesting isn't free. You have trading costs. You pay commissions, deal with bid-ask spreads, potentially market impact when you sell the loser and buy the replacement, and then again when you eventually switch back or sell the replacement. Retirement accounts don't usually have those kinds of transaction costs tied directly to the act of deferral itself.
Right. Okay. So those costs, the report talks about them as a hurdle rate. What does that mean in practical terms for someone thinking about this?
Yeah. The hurdle rate.
Yeah.
Basically, trading costs, commissions, spreads, market impact, they eat directly into any potential tax benefit.
They subtract from the gain.
Exactly. The tax saving you get has to be bigger than these costs for the whole exercise to be even slightly worthwhile. It's a hurdle you have to clear. So we've seen the theoretical deferral benefit might be slim. Now we layer on these real tangible costs.
And these costs can add up, can't they? The report gave some estimates.
Yeah, they did. For a, let's say, smaller investor trading maybe $10,000, they estimated total costs around 0.20% for the whole round trip, sell loser, buy replacement, later sell replacement, buy original back, four trades.
Right.
For a larger investor trading maybe $1 million, they estimated it closer to 0.28%. And that was for liquid U.S. large cap stocks. They noted it could be higher for less liquid stuff or international stocks.
So let's put that together. Say you have just a small loss, like 5%. How do the costs stack up against the savings?
Okay, the report has a good example. You start with $100, it drops to $95.
Yes.
So that's a $5 loss. If you harvest it, assuming a 20% capital gains rate, you save $1 in tax today.
$5.
All 20%.
Right. $1.
But if your round-trip trading costs are, say, 0.28%, using their higher estimate, that's $0.28 per $100 trade. Times four trades for the full cycle. That's $1.12 in costs.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So in year one, even if you earn a small return on that deferred $1 tax saving, you're likely negative overall because the trading costs are more than the tax save $1. Trading frequently on small losses can literally destroy value.
Ouch. Okay, what if the loss is bigger, say 30%?
They looked at that too. $100 drops to $70. That's a $30 loss. The tax saving at 20% is $6. Using the same 0.28% cost per trade, four trades cost you $1.12. So your net benefit in year one, after costs, and maybe earning a bit on the deferred $6, is much smaller. They calculated around $22,000.
So even with the big 30% loss, the net benefit after costs is pretty marginal, 22 cents on $100.
Yeah. The takeaway is pretty clear. Those transaction costs are a major drag, especially on smaller losses.
Okay, so we have the direct costs. But the report also flagged this other risk, tracking error, because of the wash sale rule. Can you unpack that?
Right, tracking error. So the watch sell rule says you sell stock A at a loss. You can't buy stock A back for 30 days. To stay invested, you might buy stock B, which is similar but not substantially identical. Maybe another large cap tech stock if you sold Apple, or an ETF tracking a slightly different index.
Okay, a substitute.
Exactly. But stock B isn't going to perform exactly like stock A over those 30 plus days. That difference in performance, that's tracking error.
And how does that hurt you?
Couple of ways. One, the simple way. Your substitute, stock B, just does worse than stock A would have done during that period. Poof. There goes some or all of your expected tax benefit.
Okay, underperformance. What's the other way?
The other way is maybe more insidious. Let's say stock B actually does well over those 30 days. You might think, great, but when you sell stock B after 30 days to buy back stock A, that gain on stock B is a short-term capital gain.
Ah, short-term, taxed higher.
Generally taxed at your ordinary income tax rate, which is often much higher than the long-term capital gains rate you are hoping to eventually pay on stock A. So you might harvest a loss to defer a long-term gain, but end up realizing a short-term gain in the process. Not ideal.
Yeah, that could definitely wipe out the benefit, or worse. So you're trading one tax situation for potentially a worse one.
It's a real risk. And because of these costs and this tracking error risk, Greenline suggests thinking about it almost like a risk-reward calculation. They mention maybe using a Sharpe ratio framework, basically asking, is the potential reward, the tax saving, big enough to justify the risk, costs, and tracking error?
And when would it be justified, roughly?
Generally, they imply it's more likely to make sense for large losses where the tax saving is substantial, especially if those losses can offset high tax rate gains like short-term gains, and ideally in situations where you can find a substitute with very low expected tracking error.
Okay, so big losses, high tax rates offset, low tracking error. That seems like a narrower set of circumstances than just harvest any loss.
Definitely.
Now, how does all this compare to just a simple buy and hold strategy in terms of tax efficiency for you, the investor?
Yeah, this is a really key comparison in the Greenline report. They make a strong case that often simple buy and hold is actually more tax efficient than active tax loss harvesting.
Really? How so?
Well, think about what drives tax efficiency. Two main things: paying the lowest possible rate and deferring taxes as long as possible.
Okay.
Buy and hold helps with both. First, by holding investments for over a year, your gains qualify for long-term capital gains rates, which are usually much lower than short-term rates. The report used 20% vs 40% as an example. That rate difference is a huge tax advantage right there.
Right, just holding longer gets you a better rate.
And second, buy and hold inherently provides tax deferral. You don't pay any tax on the appreciation until you actually sell. And crucially, this deferral applies to your entire holding, and it comes without any of those extra trading costs we just talked about with loss harvesting.
Good point. The deferral is free with buy and hold, and it's on the whole amount. Did the report try to quantify that buy and hold deferral benefit?
Yeah, they did an estimate. They calculated that just deferring taxes for a decade on a portfolio earning, say, 10% a year, boosts your after-tax return by about 0.57% compared to paying taxes annually, just from letting the whole thing compound pre-tax for longer.
Okay, 0.57%. How does that compare to their estimate for loss harvesting?
Well, remember, their optimistic estimate for loss harvesting, assuming a big 50% loss, was only about 0.28%, and that was before accounting for trading costs or tracking error.
So 0.57% benefit from simple buy and hold deferral versus, at best, 0.28% gross benefit from loss harvesting.
That's the comparison they draw. It strongly suggests buy and hold is generally the more powerful tax efficiency strategy for most long-term investors.
That really puts it in perspective. What about the argument, though, that loss harvesting is mainly useful if you have a portfolio that constantly throws off short-term gains? Does the report address that?
It does. Their take is basically, if your strategy is generating a lot of short-term gains, maybe the problem isn't the lack of loss harvesting, but the strategy itself.
Fix the underlying issue.
All right. Maybe focus on trading less frequently, aiming for longer holding periods, rather than adding the complexity of loss harvesting just to clean up the tax mess from excessive short-term trading. And they also make that slightly funny point. You know, for loss harvesting to even work, you need losing investments first, which isn't usually the goal.
Ah, yeah. You need things to go wrong before you can apply the fix. It's a bit backward. Okay, so the theory and the costs look marginal. What about historical evidence? Did loss harvesting actually help much in the real world, according to Greenline?
They look at this specifically. They ran a historical simulation on the S&P 500 index from 1928 all the way to 2017, breaking it into 9 decades.
Okay, what was the simulation?
For each decade, they figured out which month would have been the absolute best time to harvest a loss, the index's lowest point in that decade. They assumed you sold at that low, reinvested the tax savings immediately, held the position for a month, so simplified wash sale avoidance, then switched back. They factored in a 0.1% transaction cost per trade and assumed pretty favorable tax rates, 40% short-term, 20% long-term.
So a pretty optimized, maybe even slightly unrealistic scenario. What did they find?
The results were underwhelming, mostly. They found significant benefits only in the 2 decades with massive market crashes. The Great Depression decade, 1928-1937, and the global financial crisis decade, 2008-2017.
Only during major crises.
Pretty much. Yeah. In most of the other 7 decades, the benefit was tiny, almost negligible. And in 2 decades, the late 50s, early 60s, and the late 80s, early 90s, the market basically just went up. So there wasn't even an opportunity to harvest a loss on the index during those whole decades, according to their method.
No losses, no harvesting. Makes sense. So what was the overall average benefit across all those decades?
The historical average boost to return was only about 0.25% per year. And remember, that's heavily skewed by those 2 crisis periods.
Okay, 0.25%, driven by crises. Did they do any other historical checks?
Yeah, they also mentioned another analysis where they completely ignored the wash sale rule, like pretend you could sell and buy back instantly at the bottom. Even then, outside of the crisis decades, the average benefit was only 0.11%.
Wow. So even giving it every advantage, the historical benefit in normal times looks really small.
That's the strong implication, yes.
What about for a diversified portfolio, though? Not just the index. You'd have individual stocks going down even if the market's up. Does that change things?
They acknowledge that. With more individual holdings, you'll definitely have more opportunities to harvest losses on specific positions. There's more optionality, as they put it. But they argue it's unlikely to dramatically increase the magnitude of the overall portfolio level benefit. You might get that small benefit more consistently, perhaps, but it's still likely to be a small benefit.
Okay, so summing it all up, what's the final verdict from the Greenline Partners report on tax loss harvesting for you, the listener?
The main overarching conclusion is that tax loss harvesting really offers, at best, very small potential return benefits. These tiny benefits mostly come from tax deferral and those widely hyped claims of getting, 1% or more extra return consistently. The report argues that's just not supported by their analysis or the historical data.
Okay, a reality check. But are there any situations where it might actually make sense, according to them? When should you potentially consider it?
They do lay out a few conditions where it could be more justifiable. First, if you have really big losses, especially short-term losses, which you can use to offset high tax rate gains elsewhere. That's probably the clearest case.
Big losses against high tax gains. Got it.
Second, if the specific losing position has super, super low trading costs, if the hurdle rate is practically zero, then even a small tax deferral benefit might be worthwhile. Third, if you genuinely expect very high market returns in the future, because that amplifies the value of any deferral. And fourth, relatedly, if you expect lower tax rates in the future.
So big loss, high rate offset, low costs, high future returns, lower future taxes. That sounds like a fairly specific checklist.
It does. It's not an everyday scenario for every loss.
What about using it to kind of paper over the cracks? Like if you have other investments that are really tax inefficient, should you use loss harvesting to compensate?
Greenline advises against that thinking. Their point is, if you need harvesting to fix the tax drag from somewhere else, maybe you should fix the somewhere else first.
Simplify, don't complicate.
Exactly. Simplify the portfolio. Maybe make those other holdings more tax efficient directly, rather than adding this extra layer of harvesting complexity on top.
That seems like solid advice. And they also made a distinction about selling losers for investment reasons versus purely tax reasons, right?
Absolutely. Okay. Selling something that's down because fundamentally you don't want to own it anymore. That's just good portfolio management. Nothing wrong with that. But selling an otherwise attractive long-term holding just to grab a small temporary tax break, that's where they urge caution. The costs and risks might easily outweigh that short-term tax benefit.
And they had that Munger quote.
Yeah, the Charlie Munger quote, cautioning against letting tax avoidance drive your investment decisions, because it often leads to really dumb mistakes. It's a great reminder to keep the focus on the investment merits first, taxes second.
Okay. Now, briefly, the report had an appendix example. What did that show? Just reinforce the main points.
Pretty much. It was a simplified 2-asset portfolio showing the mechanics with and without harvesting. In their specific example, doing the harvesting led to an $8 improvement in net worth over a few periods, a very small difference.
Yay, bucks.
Yeah. And they stressed this benefit came from earning a return on the deferred tax minus the tax you eventually pay on that extra return. They also noted this example ignored the 30-day wash sale rule, just to keep it simple. So even in a simplified world without that complexity, the bottom line impact was marginal.
And did that example have any other caveats?
Yes. Importantly, it excluded interest and dividend income. The report points out that dividends and interest are a big part of total returns historically, especially for bonds. And you generally can't offset that kind of income with capital losses from stocks. So that further limits how much of your overall portfolio's tax liability loss harvesting could actually address.
Okay, so wrapping up this deep dive based on the Greenline Partners report, what's the absolute key takeaway you should leave with?
I think the main takeaway is tax loss harvesting is real, it exists, but the benefits are often significantly overstated. The core benefit is tax deferral, and its value is pretty sensitive to future returns and future tax rates, neither of which we know for sure. And critically, it comes with real costs and real risks, trading costs and tracking error that eat into any potential advantage.
And for many, perhaps most, investors, a simpler path might be more effective.
Very likely. Focusing on a sensible long-term buy-and-hold strategy naturally gives you powerful tax advantages, lower long-term rates, and deferral on the whole portfolio without the extra costs, complexity, and risks of constantly trying to harvest losses.
Right. So maybe here's a final thought for you to chew on. Given all these complexities, the costs, the risks, and the potentially quite small benefits we've discussed, is the effort involved in meticulous tax loss harvesting always justified? Are you potentially spending valuable time and mental energy chasing tiny incremental gains when that effort might be better spent focusing on the bigger picture, your long-term strategy, asset allocation, and saving discipline? It's worth asking yourself if this specific tactic truly aligns with achieving your financial goals in the most effective and perhaps simplest way. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.